Hello again, fellow basement dwellers. This is your good friend Patrick O'Dowd welcoming you into another edition of Bandwagon Nerds. Bandwagon Nerds is, of course, brought to you as a part of the Chairshot Radio Network here on thechairshot.com, where we remind you to always use your head. I am, of course, joined soundbiteless this week. After a week of old school bandwagoning, we had banjos. We had the Platt family telling us to use our head. We had applause. We had it all. We had the inexorably 9-hour long intro. Oh, we always have that one. But we had it all because PC Tunney had to do the recording, not Patrick. Because Patrick sucks and can't get into the site to put the show up. But anyway, it was just the two of us, Tunney and I. We held down the fort in the absence of the great David Ungar, who decided to embrace spooky season last week, went out and checked out some Six Flags Fright Fest, as well as you said you went to Knott's Berry Farm. Is that correct? Well, you did.
Thought about it. Contemplated it.
You imagined going to Knott's Berry Farm.
Yeah, I faked to the left. No, I faked to the right. I thought about faking. No, we're probably going to do Knott's Berry Farm for Christmas, that sort of thing.
Gotcha. But that does. So we are here with our usual complement of bandwagoners. That's right. Myself, Patrick O'Dowd. You just heard the lawyer, David Ungar. And we also have Mr. Saturday Night, the executive vice president of talent and Wednesday programming here at the Chairshot Radio Network, Mr. PC Tunney. I gave you another moniker and I forgot it. I can't remember what it was. So it's forgotten. It's dead to us.
The strange thing, I guess it's not strange. It's Stranger just kind of things? Been, well, it, throughout my life, I've had multiple nicknames. So yeah, I can't.
I have held tight to, I have one nickname on this network. I've embraced it. It is my truth. That being the number one chair shot villain. I can't ever say anything nice for too long. Apparently I've gone soft. I may also, I guess I could call you the chair shot grammar policeman, or at least the grammar spell check. Spell check, PC Tunney.
When things are funny, that's just where we're at.
When things are funny, call PC Tunney. Look at that rhyme. I did that myself.
Splinter. Yeah. You splinter, yeah, I son am of a on bitch. It.
And here's the thing. Last week was like this stripped down show. We talked about some stuff, but there wasn't like a lot of exciting news. And then this week was like, well, Dave's coming back. So let's have all kinds of news. We can get mad at Disney over Star Wars stuff this week. We're going to talk about Warner Brothers Discovery and how they are on the market. And there's already controversy as to what that's going to mean. Zack Snyder can't stop posting shit. James Gunn posting shit. G.I. Joe and Transformers, all kinds of stuff. No show this week, but next week, because this Thursday, the series Tunney's been waiting for is returning to Netflix. And that's right, everyone. The Witcher back. Diet Geralt will be back.
How many episodes?
Just one calorie. just one calorie, not Geralt enough for some.
How many episodes we got here this season?
I don't even know. I don't care. I just want to enjoy it.
22. We have 22 episodes this year, Tony.
Well, I will see you all in 2028.
Tony acts like he might miss the show. And now that Tony has missed the show, he admitted this. Now that he's ripped off the Band-Aid of the streak, like, there's really no obligation. Like, he could just, you know, maybe the Packers are on and he wants to watch the Packers and he'll do that. I don't know. So it's just, it's fun times.
It's cold out now, so it's you know.
Maybe it's cold outside. It did finally show up. It's
really
great. I love
go.
Beautiful fall weather here in New England, by the way. I'm very excited for that coming up. But anyway, but we do have still a pretty darn loaded show. Yes, next week we will start doing our episode by episode review of The Witcher. I am the only person who seems to have like zero ambivalence. Even Dave, he has admitted the Geralt casting change of Liam Hemsworth has left him feeling a little unsure of how this is going to go. This is really a make or break season for The Witcher and the Bandwagon, because if it does turn out to be good and it's worth sticking with, I'm sure we'll see it through. But if it's trash, and I hope that you don't think I'm biased, like, and know that I will be man enough to admit if it's trash, I'll agree that it's trash. But if I disagree with you, you know, I'll fight that fight.
Everything that I've heard about this season of The Witcher is critically important, because season 5 is supposed to be the end. And this season's really supposed to set the stage for what most Witcher fans were anticipating would be the best season of all of them. So, yeah, there's some pressure on Liam to not to deliver on some respects. I mean, we'll see. I'm going to be open-minded.
It's a tough deal. It's a raw deal for this guy, because it's just one of those things. If he had started as Geralt, we're watching it with a different mindset. And as much as I joke about Henry Cavill did really well in that role and was very much.
He was Geralt. I mean, that's the thing you got to say. He was Geralt. He embraced it. He read the lore. He was engrossed and immersed in that. And that's going to be a tough standard to meet.
Yeah, we'll have to see what happens. But that's next week. This week, we just going to wander our way into the trailer park. And I know, Dave, you're going to play some great canned banjo to get us there right now. And guys, I got to tell you, we've got 4 trailers this week, and I noticed this trend, and when we get to the third trailer on this list in the rundown, I finally was like, clearly this is a thing that just everybody's doing now, and that is the biographical documentary about, like, focusing on entertainers. You know, we talked about this the other, you know, a couple weeks ago with the John Candy documentary, I Like Me. Now, we're about to talk about a trio of documentaries, 2 of which that are coming up on Netflix. So Netflix in particular, really embracing this. And another one that was independently done about famous folks in entertainment. We're going to start with the Netflix documentary, Elena y los Dinos. I don't know how.
Dino.
Which is yet another documentary. This one including family footage never before seen of the great artist who tragically was murdered back in the late 90s, Selena, whose biopic, portrayed by Jennifer Lopez, launched Jennifer Lopez's career. But this was a young woman who was an up-and-coming artist who was adored by her fans and tragically lost her life. And we are getting another look into this woman's life as her memory continues to live on and is something of a legend, particularly, you know, in Mexico and in South America. And so this woman's life has always held a special fascination in popular culture. I think because she was very much the definition of what could have been. What could have star could she have been had her life not been cut short? Because she was on the rise. Hey, you know, and she was you know, she was getting big before the Enriquez and the Mark Antonys and, you know, and the Jennifer Lopez's of the world. Like Selena was the one that was on the way up before tragically her life was cut short. And now we get this new documentary just looking at intimate details of her life. And I felt like it was just something that needed to be recognized and named as something that's coming out on Netflix. I don't know that it's one that I'm going to line up to check out because I was not as entrenched in that, but can't a significant figure in popular culture back in the late 90s, early 2000s, and getting another look at her life and her rise and what she meant to her fans and her people. So I think that is a compelling watch and the first of what we're covering today. Dave, what say you?
No, I agree with you. I think, you know, she's one of these personalities that has, like, her stature and her legend has just continually grown since her tragic passing. You know, it's one of those situations where her fan base, despite the passage of time, has never really relented, never really gone down. So it'll be a good documentary to watch. I mean, I'm not the biggest, I mean, I'm a fan of her because of what happened, that sort of thing. I mean, when her music was going on, it wasn't like something I was running out buying CDs or that sort of thing. But she is inspirational to a generation, like literally a generation of her fans to this day. So I think it'll be a good get for Netflix, and you know, something that'll be worth watching. I don't know, like you're saying, Pat, I'm not going to be running right out and adding this to the watch list immediately, but I get why they're doing it, and it is a fascinatingly tragic story. So yeah, it should be good.
She is like what she could have become, what Bad Bunny has kind of become in a term of global phenomenon, right? She transcended just being, or she was just beginning to transcend being outside of her own culture, where she was just like Mount Rushmore of pop culture. And it'd be like if Britney Spears came from a family and ended up, you know, being taken away in her peak. So yeah, it's just, it's a tragic story. But when they say in here that she affected the lives of so many with Latino heritage, she did. You know, she was really the face of their culture. And the songs to back it up.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's going to be a wonderful, very interesting documentary. It's going to be one that I will see at some point, but it probably is not going to be one that I see right away. One that I hope becomes available for me to see right away is our next one. I have since corrected the rundown for my own eyes so that I don't misread it, but it is a biography, a documentary about Tim Burton titled Tim Burton Life in the Lie. And is another one of those portraits looking at the life and career of a famous director. We also have the Scorsese documentary that's running on Apple TV. I have yet to watch that one. Tim Burton, though, for me, like especially when he was at his peak and kind of in his heyday, and the Edward Scissorhands to Nightmare Before Christmas era, I watched a ton of his movies. You know, he and Johnny Depp and Helena Bonham Carter have a connection that goes above and beyond everything. And you look at the people that are in this documentary to talk about Tim's life.
Michael Keaton,
Danny DeVito talks about him at one point as well.
Can we just say on a side note real quick, Eli Manning and Danny DeVito in their commercials,
the Eli's,
I mean, come on, it's Eli's. Yeah, some of the best.
Have you seen the newest one? Where he takes the hair off.
Yeah, and he's
looking like Danny DeVito. It's good stuff.
Epic, sorry.
But Tim Burton, like, I put Tim Burton in the same sort of category of creative mind as Jim Henson, and in different ways. Like, they're brilliant, but a little weird. And you see that in the entertainment that they put out. And, you know, if you look at, like, Jim Henson had this dark, mature sense of humor that you don't always think of because it was always done with puppetry and Muppets. And Tim Burton, like, he just leans into that darker sort of gothic, macabre side with so many of his movies. And so many actors have grown to love and enjoy working with him, even when his movies fail or aren't so great. I'm looking at you, Willy Wonka. That shit's bad. But the thing that I thought was really interesting and cool is that this is a guy who's always pouring out with new ideas. Like, the number of things that they show as they, like, kind of go back into his studio, and you just see, like, books upon books of, like, sketches and ideas and art that he's not even touched, just tells you what kind of mind you're dealing with and why Disney couldn't handle him. because he was too much. He was just too much. Tunney, favorite Tim Burton movie?
Well, he did Batman with Michael Keaton, right?
Both of them, yeah. Batman and Batman Returns.
He is Beetlejuice, correct? Those are all great, but I would say I love Edward Scissorhands. It was just and I've mentioned this so many times, how lucky I was, like, kind of growing up with divorced parents, staying with my grandparents very often as a child, and getting to go to so many movies in the 80s and 90s. Like, that's what we would do. So to go see Edward Scissorhands in the movie theater, remembering that as a kid, remembering how scared I was at some points, and then how intrigued I was at others, and then just how much I had fallen in love with Johnny Depp playing that character by the end of the movie as a child, that would have to be it for me.
Vincent Price's last film.
It's the contrast of, like, the modern family and then the dark part of where he comes from,
right?
You know, and, well, running up the hill and everything, and the love interest.
It's a dark fairy tale. That's the thing that I love about it, is it's a dark fairy tale and a fantasy and a tragedy that can't be. It's a beautiful film. I remember I saw that on New Year's Eve in the theater. I remember seeing that on New Year's Eve in the theater whatever year it came out. I remember going because it was my friend, whose name also happened to be Patrick. His birthday was New Year's Eve. And so I remember that was what we did, is we went, saw Edward Scissorhands, and that was his birthday party. It was great. Dave, your favorite Tim Burton film?
I love what Tunney said. Edward Scissorhands is a great movie. I mean, I'd probably go with the original Batman just because of the significance it has to nerds like me. But I will say one that flies under the radar, in my opinion, from him, because my kids absolutely love this movie, is The Corpse Bride, which is just a tremendous animated. It's a really different take on that sort of, and it has that feel of Nightmare Before Christmas, doesn't it? I mean, I've always kind of felt like it has that Jack Skellington sort of feel, like he would have fit in perfectly in Corpse Bride. So while Batman is my favorite, I would be remiss in not giving a major shout out to The Corpse Bride because of what it meant to my kids.
Probably my all-time favorite outside of the classics that people talk about is Big Fish. Yes. Starring Ewan McGregor, Danny DeVito, Billy Crudup. That movie is, I haven't watched, actually, it's funny now that you guys are really thinking back on it. I haven't watched that movie in a really long time. I have to bust that one out. That's a beautiful fairy tale and a story of a father and son reconciling, a son reconciling with his father, who has a propensity for tall tales and lies. The thing that I don't like about this is that it is available to stream right now at the low, low price of like $24.99 on some... whatever. And I love Tim Burton, but not enough to pay for it. Until it gets on a streaming service that I have.
Let me throw three other things out there. Mars Attacks.
Yep.
And then two that you guys might not know that he was director for. Pee-wee's Big Adventure.
Yeah, that's true.
And in 1979, The Muppet Movie.
I did not know about The Muppet Movie. Or if I did, I'd forgotten. I knew about Pee-wee's Big Adventure because one of the cool Easter eggs in Batman Returns is that Paul Reubens and the woman who played the waitress in Pee-wee's Big Adventure are Oswald Cobblepot's parents in Batman Returns.
I know. I knew Paul Reubens was the dad. I remember because I watched that the other day it was on.
Yeah.
Like, as far as cinematography goes and like the stages that they build for that Batman is just awesome.
The atmosphere that Tim Burton creates is special.
Like the city square down into the underbelly of where, the Penguin is, and all of that is just...
Yeah, 1,000%. No argument there. It's great, great stuff. All right, let's move to our third biopic documentary. This one, I know I will be watching. Would bet that Tunney and Dave will check it out. As we got another significant comedic figure from the 80s who then transitioned into more family-friendly fare while at the same time still trying to find that respect as a serious actor. We're talking about Eddie Murphy. Eddie Murphy was just a murderer's row of bankable comedy in the 80s, whether it be Beverly Hills Cop, Trading Places, 48 Hours, Eddie Murphy Raw and Delirious, Coming to America. Like, that man was bank in the 80s. We're getting a documentary involving him and his family, chronicling his life and career. And again, people talking about just how influential Eddie Murphy was on not only their career, but entertainment. That man single-handedly was Saturday Night Live for a season. Like, he was just, and he was like 19 at the time. Just fucking unbelievable as a comedian. And he's one of those actors that Tony and I actually talked about this last week when you weren't here, Dave. Those actors that people refuse to see as anything more than the comedies they produce, people like Jim Carrey or Adam Sandler, that really struggle to get the credibility. Bill Murray is another example. Like these guys who put out phenomenal, serious acting performances, and they don't win the award, even though they, you know, frankly, maybe have a case. You know, I think Lost in Translation is one of the best examples of that. I also, you know, Eddie Murphy, the closest he ever came was he got nominated for Dreamgirls as Best Supporting Actor. He was nominated in Dreamgirls for Best Supporting Actor. He did not win. It was very disappointing. And it was, he's a terrific actor. And I'm really interested in this because you can see just how important his family is to him and why he sort of changed the films that he makes and made because of who his audience was that he wanted to make films for. I'm all in on this one. I can't imagine, like, I've already put it on my watch list. Like on Netflix, you can get a flag to be notified when it plays. You can search it, find the trailer, and then flag it. I've done it. I think other people should too. I look forward to this one. I want to hear it. Dave, I can't imagine that you don't have a same level of interest or connection just because what I know out of this podcast and these in our group.
Yeah, I'd probably say as much, if not more, because I mean, Eddie Murphy was in that first, it was like the first record that he did. I mean, before Delirious or Raw, there was another one. And I think that's the one where Boogie in the Butt came as a single off of that record. But, you know, when I was young, like a teenager and that sort of thing, you know, all I was doing was listening to Richard Pryor and Eddie Murphy and their stand-up routines. And when they did Harlem Nights, which, you know, I would say from what I thought Harlem Nights was going to be, was the movie kind of disappointing? Maybe a little bit. But, you know, when you get Eddie Murphy, Richard Pryor, and Red Fox all together, you're going to have a hard time failing. And I don't think Harlem Nights failed. You know, it just wasn't the best script, I don't think, for the amount of talent that you had there. But yeah, Eddie Murphy is a cornerstone of Saturday Night Live. You look at the comedic roles that he did. Trading Places is one of my favorite movies of all time. I mean, Beverly Hills Cop, one of my favorite, you know, it's right up there. So, I mean, he's just a giant amongst, you know, comedic actors. And I agree with you. Like, he's one of these guys who has not been able to get out of that mold of just being pigeonholed into that. But he did kind of escape from the whole just he's just a stand-up comic. Very similar to what Steve Martin, like Steve Martin was typecast the same way originally. And then Steve Martin evolved into a megastar and was, you know, kind of looked at a little bit differently for his more serious roles. I don't know if Eddie ever got that sort of recognition, but he's every bit the comedian or more of a comedian than Steve Martin is. And I, you know, Donkey is when he did Donkey and Shrek is just some.
I think that was my favorite part is he's like walking around the house at one point and he's like, who has all the money or something about all the money. And he like makes a Shrek joke about how much money it's earned him.
Right. So I agree. I mean, this is right up there with the John Candy documentary that as things that
but
resonate
less sad.
With. Yeah, less sad because Eddie's still alive and doing well. But I think if from a comedic standpoint, you know, it's going to resonate with me probably even more, a little bit more than John Candy, just because of my connection to him. You know, it does make me wish, I wish they'd like redo a Richard Pryor sort of thing. But I imagine there's going to be a lot of Richard in this Eddie Murphy thing because he was such an influence on Eddie.
It's funny. I'd seen a Michael Caine quote about being in Jaws 4, where he's like, yeah, the movie was absolutely ridiculously awful, but the house it bought my mother is lovely.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Basically, yeah.
That Jaws, that was a third. Wasn't that Jaws 3 where the stupid shark shows up in the Bahamas and it's like, wait, what the fuck are we doing here?
They can follow families now, Dave. They can follow families.
This time it's personal.
Eddie Murphy is probably one of the biggest pop culture icons in American history, at least modern American history. And you guys have pretty much said everything that needs to be said. I'll just give you a few more movies of his that I think are spectacular that may not, you know, pop up right on anybody's list. Norbit is fucking hilarious. Bowfinger is spectacular with Steve Martin. Mr. Church is an excellent comedy drama. And then two under the radar, really kind of weird ones. 1,000 Words, where he literally has 1,000 words left to say. And one of my favorite Eddie Murphy lines, Psych Your Mind from Holy Man with him and Jeff Goldblum. So there you go. Some underrated, off-the-radar Eddie Murphy movies there for you.
I'll add one more. Boomerang kind of put Halle Berry on the map, yeah. Man. You know, I mean, that really...
And that's a great transition right there, Patrick.
That's almost right, because we actually do have a fiction film to talk about. We got a trailer double shared in the Bandwagon chat titled Crime 101, starring Chris Hemsworth and the aforementioned Halle Berry. There were several other, Mark Ruffalo is in this film. And Chris Hemsworth plays a thief who all of his jobs seem to be happening along the same stretch of highway. He is
the 101.
The 101. He is being pursued by Mark Ruffalo. It's no Heat, which I'm still in awe of that movie and regret that I never saw it until last week. But this looks like
if we could get like a Fred Armisen and Bill Hader cameo in this movie talking about the freeways of LA, you know.
That might be good. I'd pay to see it. It'd be funny stuff.
I've been there. You don't need to hear about it. It's not fun.
No, the Californians. It's a Saturday Night Live thing. Sorry, Patrick.
I get you. This movie looks like a lot of fun. I love the conversation that Ruffalo and Hemsworth are having in the car at the end where they're talking about the different movies and picking one over the other. I think one was The French Connection and the other was, Camera, what the other one was. Or it was Bullet. Or something.
You know,
like
Patrick,
that.
It's almost like the conversation held at the table in Heat.
Yeah, it's a direct homage. Like, I can't see it as anything otherwise. But this looks like a lot of fun. Good movie. You know, Hemsworth and Ruffalo have acted together before, obviously, in their Marvel flicks. Halle Berry is a wild card involved in this as well. I don't know if it's a theater stop for me, but it's definitely one I look forward to watching when it becomes available on streaming. Probably going to be a lot of fun to see in a theater, though, just given, you know, if you got a good car chase scene on an IMAX screen with that level of stereo and sound.
What the fuck was that?
You could have let it go. We wouldn't have known.
No.
This looks fun. This looks like this could be excellent. This could be like the next kind of thriller of its type where it's just nonstop, you know, mind fuck action. The Hemsworth project I'm looking forward to. We'll title it that. This looks great, though. I really think it does. What do you think, Dave?
I'm trying to figure out why we couldn't get Chris Hemsworth to be Geralt instead of his brother, right? I mean, that would have been...
Because he was too busy doing something good like
too
this
busy
project.
I thought he was like stepping away from acting, actually, and that doesn't seem to be the case. But as far as this movie goes, this movie, not a series, right?
It's a movie.
No, it's a movie.
Okay. And it looks great. It looks great. We got Thor versus Hulk all over again. Throw in a little Catwoman just for good measure. And it looks like a fun time. I like the theme about all these robberies taking place over this very long stretch of highway in California on the 101. And then it seems like at the end, he kind of deviates from that. And that leads to the consequences of whatever's happening. But yeah, it looks fantastic. It's got a killer cast, cool premise. It has, you know, I imagine Greg DeMarco will be watching this because there's a little bit of an Ocean's 11-ish theme going on there.
No,
he won't.
No, I doubt it.
Okay.
He might. Who knows? He probably doesn't even know it.
You guys have recorded 3 weeks in a row. That is a streak. So anything is possible.
It is true. Anything can happen. He is in full Samoa Joe booking right now. So we'll leave that alone. As he's 2 weeks away from, 2 or 3 weeks away from this big show. And we are seconds away from our first commercial break. That's what's going to happen here. We're going to close the book on the trailer park. And when we come back, start diving into some news around the nerdosphere. So stay tuned. You don't want to miss it. You are listening to Bandwagon Nerds here on the Chairshot Radio Network on thechairshot.com.
Hey, Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. Now, I don't know if you've heard, but Mint's premium wireless is $15 a month. But I'd like to offer one other perk. We have no stores. That means no small talk.
Crazy weather we're having.
No, it's not. It's just weather. It is an introvert's dream. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3 month plan, $15 per month equivalent required. New customer offer first 3 months only. Then full price plan options available. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. This is your boy, Kenny Killer, telling you to make sure you check out TheChairShot.com. Bringing you breaking news, interviews, podcasts galore, everything pro wrestling. Make sure you check it out, TheChairShot.com.
Welcome back, everyone, to Bandwagon Nerds here on the ChairShot Radio Network, a part of thechairshot.com, where we remind you to always use your head. Make sure you head over to prowrestlingtees.com/thechairshot to take care of all of your ChairShot swag needs, including a Bandwagon Nerd shirt. Get it for around $20. Spend a few dollars more to get it soft style. It'll feel great on your giblets. Gentlemen, tons of news this week, but I wanted to start with one that made the 1980s child that is Patrick O'Dowd excited. And that is that word came out this week that the Energon Universe adult animated series based on a comic from Hasbro and Skybound with Joe Henderson as a showrunner is going to be hitting the TV marketplace. Skybound Entertainment, you may ask, owned by one Robert Kirkman. Dave, what does Robert Kirkman give us?
He gave us the Walking Dead universe.
And
what else did it get? Tell me. I'm drawing a blank.
Invincible, dude. Invincible. He gave us Invincible.
That's right.
Oh, yeah. Totally. Got it.
That's right.
Anyway.
That's right.
Totally he took over. Yeah, Kirkman, this is a comic book that takes place in this, that's owned by Skybound Entertainment, that actually is a melding of not only G.I. Joe and the Transformers, but also his Energon universe, which is its own sort of entity. And it's the best selling G.I. Joe / Transformers / Hasbro comic ever. And so that it is going to be put out as an adult animated series in like that anime artwork style it's exciting for me. I can't wait to see something that is targeting me and the child that lives inside with
now you you know. And knowing is half the battle.
He does have that soundbite.
I very much enjoy the soundbite. Sergeant Slaughter follows me on X. That's about it.
Dave, hey, you in? You in on this?
Slaughter. I think Sarge follows me too. I gotta reach out to him sometime. Transformers.
I'm not familiar with the comic, by the way.
Yeah, the fact that the comic exists, I mean, it seems like such a random crossover, the G.I. Joe universe and Transformers joining up, but why not? Let's do it.
That has been something that has been clamored for decades, though. So
like
much
you,
so.
You can have some really interesting like mashups, though. Like if you take G.I. Formers or Trans Joes.
I don't think that's where it's going, but I will say, just to reiterate, if you've ever watched the recent Beast Wars film that came out, I'm not giving that joke any legs. The Beast Wars movie at the very end, the post-credit scene, is about one of the main protagonists joining the G.I. Joe program, knowing that Transformers exist. So there was, at one point, hopes / thoughts of a G.I. Joe Transformers crossover film. I think it works much. I think G.I. Joe and Transformers just works better in general as an animated series on its own. But that's where we are today. I'm excited for this. I message received that I'm alone in this excitement.
I think it's fun. Yeah, I'm excited for you.
I agree. Thank you. Think it's a fun, it is a very fun concept. That's for sure. So
moving on.
Wow.
Let's talk.
No.
Let's talk some bullshit. Speaking of bullshit, let's talk about some bullshit spewed by Ticketmaster this week, where they had the audacity to deny claims that they are complicit with scalpers and programs. Like, oh, hold on. I gotta bring this up. I gotta bring up the quote. Let's read the quote, because this came from Variety. They wrote a letter to Congress claiming that they do more than anyone to get tickets into the hands of real fans. That they, let's see, they also unveiled they have new measures to stop scalpers by barring users and ticket brokers from making multiple accounts using taxpayer ID, just all kinds of stuff that they claim that they're doing. And all of that is for me to be like, cool story, bro. I don't believe you. And I say this as a man. Oh, go ahead, Dave or Tony.
Well, Ticketmaster claims that they're part of the solution, not part of the problem. I call shenanigans. Those balls definitely do not fit in Jennifer Love Hewitt's mouth. That's just a bunch of crap. They are part of the problem. 100% part of the problem. buying tickets to a concert or a comedy event or whatever that is big enough to have to warrant national ticket sales in some way can be done a lot cheaper and a lot more friendly to the customer and fan involved, i.e. Bert Kreischer, one of the biggest comedy acts in the country. You can only buy your Bert Kreischer tickets at BertKreischerComedy.com. If you buy them anywhere else, you're an idiot. Because why do we need five middlemen so Ticketmaster can triple the price of the fucking ticket? It's insane. Do you ever read the list of what goes into the price of what you've paid when you pay for something on Ticketmaster? It's asinine. It's like you're being charged for your own time at some point on the list. It's like, well, you spent 10 minutes on here and you're owed $20 an hour, so you owe us $4. Wait a minute. That was my time.
Yeah, it's insane. And I'll give an example, but a real world example right now. So Rush recently announced that they are going back on tour, and they started with, you know, these limited dates. It was like 7 venues, and they've been expanding it over time. And they announced 2 dates for my area over Mohegan Sun in Uncasville, Connecticut. Now that is a smaller venue because they're using the venue where the Connecticut Sun play in WNBA. So it's a nice arena to go see a show in, but it's not huge. Care to guess, and this was my buddy Matt and I were like, I would love to see Rush. They're a special kind of band. We signed up for the general pre-sale that opens tomorrow morning. And there was a Citibank exclusive pre-sale that my buddy Matt signed up for end of the week last week, to see what we could get. Do you care to guess how much, Dave? I don't think I told you. Do you care to guess how much the nosebleed shit seats on this pre-sale were for Rush?
Is anybody opening for them?
I don't believe so.
I would guess $500.
Well, they weren't quite that high. It was $355 for nosebleeds to see Rush. And and this is the other thing is that, you know, we had a couple weeks ago, the owner of Live Nation being like, concert tickets should be more expensive. Pricing people out of seeing entertainment is insane to me. And like, I'm not going to spend $355 for a ticket to see Rush. Like, I'm just not. And I don't think I'm by no stretch of the imagination poor, but come on, man. And even, we also looked at tickets at TD Garden. TD Garden nosebleeds on a Monday. Cheapest seat was $182, which less, but still not what I like. We had set a ceiling for $150. And maybe we could talk ourselves into it, but I don't want to go to a concert on a Monday night in Boston and have to figure out the next day or whatever. It was just, it's not worth it. And I love Rush, but it's not worth it. Dave, I'm sorry. Tony and I both spoke. I kind of cut you off.
The only aspect of what they said that's probably true is that they do more than anybody else to get tickets into the hand of real fans. Yes, at usurious prices, you guys are great at that. So it's all bullshit. I mean, and you look at the effect that this had. I mean, it used to be they would post their ticket prices and be like, that's bullshit. I'm going to SeatGeek or StubHub and get a much better price. But they've closed that loophole now because they are colluding with the resellers and driving the prices up and driving the market. No greater example of this, and Tony, you know this as well as anybody, WWE is the greatest example of how they have impacted the shit out of this thing. I mean, WWE tickets, virtually any wrestling podcast now is talking about how absurd the prices are. Even from WrestleMania 41 to this year's event in Vegas is obscene. And it's just like you're saying, Pat, they are pricing people out of being able to catch entertainment, you know, and Vince McMahon, for all of his faults, would never have sat there and said, let's screw over everybody in this whole thing. So yeah, it's just bullshit. I mean, any entertainment thing, and they are, I know isn't there still an antitrust lawsuit going on against these guys for monopolistic practices?
Right.
Because you look at
it's shit like this, yeah.
Is and you know, they're going to hide behind the secondary market. Well, we don't have a monopoly. They're all out there doing this stuff. It's all bullshit. It's all a collusion and gaming of the system. And they're going down, and they're going down in a big way. And coming out here and trying to do damage control is not going to convince anybody that they are not full of shit.
I just remember once upon a time, kids, for those of you who didn't grow up in the 80s, you used to be able to go to your local record store and buy tickets to a concert for a major band. at a reasonable price, or go to the venue itself and buy from the box office, and people would line up there. And that shit just doesn't exist anymore. It doesn't exist. It's taken over by this loan company that is disingenuous at best in its effort to be good to a consumer. So more on that as it comes along, because I'm sure it's not over. And I want to talk about, it was like DC story after DC story today. And so, gentlemen, we had three. Again, I have corrected the spelling of Darkseid. No longer says Darkseid on my copy, because I actually am very self-conscious of spelling errors. And so I had to fix it on mine after I saw them. But we had three stories that came out. The first one is just Zack Snyder won't quit. Like, he just won't quit. And now Joe Mangiola is also participating in the not quittingness. The number of times Zack Snyder is going to post some sort of photo on his Instagram or his TikTok or his Reels or his Twitter showing footage of various people in his DC universe. I've come to understand it will never stop, even though it should, because in my opinion, it's just sad. The other piece of this is it's also part of a story we're going to talk about later, but he also said if a Warner Brothers were to happen to be purchased by Netflix, that he would absolutely be ready to DC Snyderverse films for streaming on Netflix and get that stuff out of here, all in an effort to, I guess, please himself and his fans. Just like, dude, it happened. Be happy that it happened. I'm sad about some of the reasons why you had to step away from DC before coming back. I also recognize, and maybe this is just me, I didn't like your movies. And I know everybody knows that I have a big Zack Snyder, like peeve. But I have given multiple flicks of his a chance and have had to explain why every one of them sucks. Except for Watchmen. I do enjoy Watchmen. But this just screams of hanger-on. This screams of desperation. This screams of, let Dave and Tony talk about this while I step away from the computer for a second.
So this unbiased setup has been brought to you by Chairshot's number one villain.
That's right. That's right.
Go ahead, Dave.
Reminding everybody that people are innocent until proven guilty. Look, this is where the Snyder Cut did more harm than good, because it emboldened Zach. It emboldened his fan base to sit there and make these sorts of claims about this sort of thing and say, oh, there's still a desire for my stuff out there. There's still an undercurrent of a fan base who wants to see my stuff over James Gunn. Let me sow the seeds of discontent a little bit more. And there's a lot of people, and as much as I love DJ, his take on this, I think, is wrong. That he seems to think that people are making a bigger deal out of this than it is. I said, no, I think people are making the adequate deal out of this that there is. Because I let the Superman stuff go. You know, when he posted a picture of Henry Cavill and said, this is Superman. All right, I'll let that go. Then he starts doubling down with pictures of I'm forgetting the pictures of Deathstroke, and that sort of thing. And I'm like, you know, if he throws out something of Ezra Miller as the Flash, saying this is the Flash, I'm going to be really pissed off. But he hasn't gone that far. But I'm just like, to me, it's like, yeah, man, you are way overestimating the appeal of your Snyderverse, thinking that it still has some legs to it. I don't know, Tony. What do you think, man? I think you just, like, I agree with Pat. This is hanging on at best. He needs to let this shit go. And I do think he is grossly overestimating the allure of his Snyderverse, whether that's ego, whether it's delusional, whether it is people like, you know, like, God love DJ, I love him, but, you know, sitting there saying, oh, this isn't that big a deal, when I think the exact opposite. I don't know, but he needs to move on, dude. This is done. Nobody who's going to buy this, and let's say Netflix buys WB, as we're going to talk about in a few minutes, they are not going to resurrect the Snyderverse, because Gunn's verse is actually making money. So why would they go back to a critically decrepit and not financially solid franchise vision? I don't see it, but I defer to you, Tony.
I think you guys are, if you don't, you clearly both are not like a fan of what he's doing. So why are you fanning the flame? Why are we even talking about it? It doesn't matter. Like, we're not going to get any more Zack Snyderverse shit. Was the Snyder Cut immensely better than what we got? Yeah, yes. It was great. It was excellent. It was phenomenal. And we talked about that already.
But is that a launch pad? to hang on like this and think there's no, a real gonna, big...
Yeah, don't, like, you even bring up as if, like, it's something that's possible. No, it's not. It's not. So who cares? This isn't big. It's a big hashtag nothing burger.
Honey, but it's fun to fan those flames sometimes.
I understand.
If I get an opportunity to dunk on Zack Snyder, why would I not?
I understand the hypocrisy of my stance on these types of things in someone who runs a radio network, which needs content to talk about.
Especially
right?
And Wednesdays.
I'm just saying, like, I will die on the hill of certain things just do not need an accelerant. They just need to be left alone.
And here's the funny thing is that this bleeds right in. Like, the reason I brought this first point up is because then we have James Gunn, who has started to get a lot of questions about Apocalypse and Darkseid. And is Darkseid showing up, especially in the wake of the season 2 finale of Peacemaker, where John Cena is in this other dimension or other alternate reality or whatever. And people start asking, is John Cena in Apocalypse? Is this where Darkseid pops up in his uniform? In his universe, not uniform, to the point where James Gunn finally had to be like, no, that's not what's going to have. His version of salvation exists and does not stick to the script that DC comic fans might expect in regard to Darkseid. I don't expect that to be exactly what it is, he said bluntly. I liked the idea of supervillains building a society in this other dimension. He talks on and on and on about it. But at the end of the day, he's like, you got to remember the first and foremost thing is that I'm building a world. And in that world, an aspect of that world is now obviously Argus, who are in charge of metahuman activities. Basically, he's saying it doesn't fit. He does at one point allude to James Gunn being like terrific or something with his Apocalypse slash dark side representation. I disagree with that. Even with his re-Snyder Cut version of Justice League, like, Darkseid's still just kind of there. He's not really the big bad in charge. So I don't know that I'm buying it. I do buy that it doesn't make any goddamn sense with where they are currently with their DC universe. Sonny, is there a place for Dirk or Darkseid to be in Gunn's universe now?
Why do we have to know everything?
Because we do. We're nerds. That's what we do.
You're just being contrarian today, Tony. God,
this coming from a guy.
Yeah,
you literally do podcasts about professional wrestling and speculating on what's going to happen next. So I do want to say that asking whether or not Darkseid has a fit in the James Gunn universe feels like a fair question.
It kind of fully flesh out the PC Tunney character among all the shows that are done here. No, I don't care. Sure, great. If we do, cool. If we don't, I'm just, I guess my sentiment is I'm tired of, like, feeling like we're owed knowing what's going to happen next. Like, and it's a detriment to our entertainment. It really is. Like, stop trying to know everything. If I'm James Gunn, I'm like trolling the shit out of fans like Giannis Antetokounmpo does Sham Sharania.
Well, and I think James Gunn does that absolutely 100%. I think that he tweets about stuff.
Okay, to answer your question, right now, fuck no. At some point, probably.
See, was that so hard?
No, a little bit.
It's okay. Do you need a hug?
Oh, need a hug? I'll hug you, Tony. You know, you're my bestie.
You know, you just don't get it, do you? We're in a volcano. Oh, sorry. No.
Couple things about this. Like, the notion that there are parademons in the trees at the end of Peacemaker season 2, where Chris is on Salvation, I'm like, where did you guys come up with that?
Because they heard a roar.
I heard a roar. It could be anything. The fact that people jump straight to parademons, I'm like, you guys are reading way too much shit into this. To answer your question, is there a place for Darkseid now? I agree with Tunney. Fuck no, because you don't do that. And this is getting back to Zack Snyder. One of the big mistakes that he made was rushing to Darkseid instead of doing like Marvel did, which was building to Thanos. You build to Darkseid. You don't rush to Darkseid or Dirkseid for that matter. You build to, well, maybe Dirkseid. But I think, you know, if Gunn is trying to build his world properly and he's trying to follow the blueprint that Marvel did, then yeah, you don't just sit there and say, yeah, let's throw Apocalypse in here right now. We haven't even introduced Batman. We haven't introduced Wonder Woman. You don't bring in Darkseid until you've established firmly establish the Justice League. You just don't do it. So I agree with him completely. Gunn is absolutely right. I am building a world here, and this is how I want to go about doing it. So yeah, to your point, there is no place for a dark side right now. It would make no damn sense. We need to establish other villains. Especially, you don't do this until Batman is brought in, because he is an integral part of anything going on. I mean, everybody runs as a Superman. He's the only thing that can stand up to Darkseid. Not exactly. Batman has a history of beating him, too, in different ways. But so that's my thought.
Funny
on
you should mention Batman.
It's like I'm planning this stuff out ahead in advance.
I didn't ask Dave to do this, everyone, but he's doing a great job of just leading into the next story, because we also got reports this week, probably in the same interview, because that's the way these news bites pop up. But Gunn was asked about the Arkham series that was at one point announced to be in development, and Gunn confirmed that the series is not currently in development and that we shouldn't really expect it to, because he said, and I quote, it just didn't work. And that happens. Sometimes I wish Marvel would pay attention to that, because I do feel like there's been times where they've kind of soldiered forward with something that just didn't work, or maybe just wasn't quite as ready to work as they would have liked it to be. I'm looking at you, She-Hulk. I think you had the opportunity to be better, but needed more time, and they just didn't want to give it that kind of time. But when you're living in a world without Batman right now, having a story about Arkham Asylum makes no goddamn sense. And until Batman makes his appearance, which still a big question, when's Batman going to show up in the James Gunn DCU? I'm going to tell you something, guys. I love that he's not. I love that we're going to get a Green Lantern Corps show, because that thing's wrapped on filming before we get anything on Batman. I'm fine with Arkham being dropped because it doesn't make sense with where they are right now, because that's what you should do in a series. Also, I've never been a particular fan, and this is my personal feeling, so you know, you guys may have a different thought on this. I've never particularly been a big fan of series that, like comic book series, that don't have the hero as a major part of the series. I don't know how I feel about Penguin. Like, it's a good show and a rise to power sort of thing. Or what was the other one? Was it a CW show or whatever that was in Gotham that followed, like, all the heroes while Batman was, like, a child? Or the villains while Batman was a child or something? You know what show I'm talking about?
I do. Was it called Gotham Knights? Not Gotham Knights or something. Or that's a video game. Tony, you know what one,
but anyway,
which one it was?
But Arkham is dead, at least for now. And I think that's the right call. Because, as somebody wise on this podcast once said, we don't need to know everything anyway. It's cool.
I'll even tack on to what Tony said. Not only do we not need to know everything, but you can't do everything. You know, and right. Arkham is one of those stories that it's very involved, and you really can't do it until you have Batman's rogue gallery of villains established. So like you're saying, Pat, it makes no damn sense to do it right now, where we haven't even introduced Batman into the DCU. And it's just too intricate a storyline and too many moving parts to really do it justice right now. But yeah, I mean, honestly, give me Court of Owls way before I ever see Arkham, and I'll be thrilled. Arkham is one of those things I'm like, I can have it and not have it. But there
You've
are
been
better,
begging for Court of Owls
Batman
for God knows how long.
We all have. If I wish Ray was here, he would echo that with me. We've been waiting for Court of Owls for years.
Very nice, very nice. Tony, any further comment?
You guys pretty much hit everything on the head. I would like to ask you guys the question, though, like, where does Batman get introduced into the where do you guys think is appropriate for Batman to get introduced in the James Gunn DCU?
That,
I mean, we're like we're a whole one fucking movie in, right? But tell me.
Well, that's the thing, is I actually, to further your point, to further your statement, I want to be surprised. Like, I want to be introduced to Bruce Wayne first, / Wayne Enterprise. We haven't even heard about Wayne Enterprises yet. Like, I want to be patient with it, and I'm okay with, you know, it being 3 or 4 or 5 movies in, because I think that's an interesting approach and a different way to approach what Marvel did, where it was like an Avenger, a movie to get themselves started. Whereas you don't necessarily need that here. You can do a couple movies in between, because everybody knows who the fuck Batman is. Everybody knows who the fuck Wonder Woman is. Like, you can wait. You don't need to bring him in. So when it makes sense, and I am still in a place where I trust James Gunn to make a decision that makes sense.
Yeah. I think I'm with you, guy. I mean, Batman, like you're saying, Batman's going to be like one of those characters where you don't need to tell the origin story, and I hope they don't. I hope they handle it like Superman. Give me a 1-minute you know, narration or something on screen that tells me where we are. Like they did with Superman. It's like, okay, I know exactly where I am. You don't need, we don't need to see Batman or Bruce Wayne's parents die all over again. But yeah, like you're saying, where do they bring him in? Is Robin there with him? That sort of situation. So, we know it's coming after Supergirl and Lanterns. That's about the extent of it.
Yeah, and who knows? We'll see what is waiting for us in the future when the future comes. What I can tell you is coming is our second commercial break. When we come back, we're going to rail on Disney a little bit, guys. Call them out. Well, some of us are. I really don't think this is that big a deal. Whatever. I can see Dave's emphatic. So we're doing it for Dave. We'll say that. So when we come back, Dave's going to go a little off the rails. And I think this will be fun. And then, of course, we are going to talk about that big, big Warner Brothers Discovery news that happened this week. So stick around. We'll be right back. You're listening to Bandwagon Nerds here as a part of the ChairShot Radio Network on thechairshot.com.
Why should you visit thechairshot.com? Thechairshot.com is your home for hard-hitting reviews, news, opinion, and analysis with attitude. Why? Because you're smarter than the average fan. Thechairshot.com. Always use your head.
Welcome back, everyone, to Bandwagon Nerds here on the ChairShot Radio Network as a part of thechairshot.com, where we remind you to always use your head. Patrick O'Dowd, David Ungar, PC Tony still here talking everything nerdosphere and what else? Oh, prowrestlingtees.com/thechairshot for all of your chair shot swag needs. So in other news that just makes fan bases mad, it was revealed this week by Adam Driver, apparently, that there was a script that was greenlit titled The Hunt for Ben Solo that Disney killed. It would have starred Adam Driver and been directed by Steven Soderbergh. Driver said the film was developed by himself and Soderbergh and screenwriter Scott Z. Burns. It was backed by Lucasfilm, but ultimately scrapped by Disney executives Bob Iger and Alan Bergman. However, a new report takes it a little bit further, alleging the movie had made significant headway into initial development before it was killed. So obviously this would have picked up after the cinematic tragic piece that was The Rise of Skywalker. And would have been a resurrection of Ben Solo, who sacrificed himself to save Rey in aforementioned tragic piece, The Rise of Skywalker. However you feel about whether or not you like the idea of this movie or not, this happens all the time for whatever reason. And it may be a bad reason. It may be dumb. You know, I know there were some impassioned reasons as to why this movie could happen. I was okay with it not happening. In fact, the other story that's now running around is that there was also a post Rise of Skywalker film being proposed to be directed by David Fincher, and that doesn't seem to fit to me at all, because I don't need weird Star Wars, man. I'm cool. But Dave, I'm gonna let you go first, because I know you're really passionate about this in the chat. Your thoughts on this movie getting killed for whatever reason?
I don't know about how passionate I was for the concept. I think the reasoning as to why it was killed was where I had some concerns about it. Because it's like the whole notion that we can't bring Ben back. You know, he sacrificed himself for Rey. But I was like, well, wait a second. You had Emperor Palpatine thrown down an exhaust shaft on the Death Star, second Death Star, when it exploded, brought him back to further a stupid storyline, which I agree with you, Pat. That, you know, the way they handled that in Rise of Skywalker was dumb as fuck.
I mean, somehow Palpatine lived.
Exactly. So you're telling me that Ben, who didn't go through, he just died, you know, right there. He sacrificed himself to the Force, more or less. Why couldn't we bring him back? He was a very popular character amongst, you know, you look at the sequel trilogy characters as to the ones who really stand out. Rey and Ben are the main ones, you know, everybody else who kind of passes. You know, Poe Dameron and Finn. There's a few who stood out, but.
Well, but.
You know, it's.
I will say that of the forefront of those, you know, the new trio, the forefront was Rey, and then Kylo Ren and his redemption arc.
Sure.
Was primary focus number two.
Exactly.
I think that's fair.
You know, is it the best course to take as far as a follow up movie to Rise of Skywalker? Probably not, but, you know, my thing was like, yeah, the idea that you can't do this because Ben died, but Star Wars is notorious for bringing back characters that you think there's no way Darth Maul survived Phantom Menace. Yeah, he did for a long, long time. And that sort of thing. So yeah, this idea that, well, we killed off Ben, can't bring him back. It just screams bullshittery to me. And yes, sir.
I have one counter argument, and this is just in terms of what we have ever seen on screen versus, you know, whether there's extended canon or what. A Jedi, not a dark side Sith, a Jedi has never come back from the dead. They've always become a Force ghost and moved on because they're at peace.
Okay. Did Kylo, and I don't remember this, this is why I'm asking you guys, is did Kylo vanish into the Force after he sacrificed himself? I don't remember that.
I don't remember that or not. Obviously, if there's a film's title is The Hunt for Kylo Ren, that implies that at least, the very least, the body was missing or was gone after it's all said and done.
I agree with you. If he vanished like Luke did, like Yoda did, like Ben Kenobi did.
Because I posit that he died at peace because of making peace with his father. And like, that's where he doesn't come back piece would make sense for me.
That's a big feature between him and Palpatine.
It's all Star Wars.
It is all Star Wars. Yes.
Is the Star Wars IP at its lowest it's ever been? Ever? I mean, ever.
Struggling right now.
Think about
it.
I think it's bad.
I think Disney has horribly mismanaged Star Wars.
What do we have to look? We have the Mandalorian movie right now.
Star Wars Visions, I think, just hit season 3 yesterday.
Ahsoka season 2 is still out there. I mean, we say that it's at its lowest, but Pat, you and I absolutely adore Andor. So,
well, the problem though is it's not that. So yes, Andor is great and I love it. I think it's the best series that Disney has put out. But let's real quick, Tony, did you give two shits about Andor?
I'll see you in a second.
So that's all you need to know about where Star Wars is, because Tony is the fan that Star Wars is not reaching anymore. And he is Mr. It's all Star Wars. And like, that's like, what is it that Disney is putting out right now in the Star Wars universe that people are genuinely excited for? Because I don't even know how excited people are for The Mandalorian and Grogu.
Well, the problem is with that is they kept pumping out seasons of that. And now they're like, well, let's take 3.5 years off and we'll give you a movie.
Right.
That's like saying, you know, sports, pick a major sporting league. We're going to take a week off to give our teams to rest before the finals. Well, you just lost all your momentum.
Right. It's not been great stuff. Cause like I just mentioned, Star Wars Visions is getting its third season. I think it either dropped this week or drops next week. It's a series of shorts, anime shorts told in the Star Wars universe. And they do some really cool shit in these shows. Like, I have thoroughly enjoyed every one of them that I've watched. Nobody knows that they exist. Like, nobody knows. And if nobody knows something exists, is it good? Even if it's good, is it good? Because if nobody knows it exists and nobody cares to watch it, then you're just pumping out content to pump out content. And Star Wars hasn't captured imagination since going under the Disney umbrella. I think that's without question a fact that their hits since Rogue One in terms of films haven't hit the way they wanted them to. And I say that as a fan of The Last Jedi. All right, let's get to it. This week, final story of the show, as we're wrapping up our last segment here on the bandwagon. We have been following the saga of Warner Brothers Discovery forever now. David Zaslav is a piece of shit. It's awful. And he's basically been taking the axe to things that we love about Warner Brothers. He's put it in position to basically bury where we are now, in that Warner Brothers Discovery is officially up for sale and is taking offers. And there have been multiple parties that have come to the table. Per Variety, we know Netflix has offered, but their offer is interesting because their offer seems to only be for IP, does not appear to be for anything more than IP. And so that kind of puts an interesting little wrinkle in that offer pitch. Paramount Skydance has been rejected on 3 different offers. One of those offers, by the way, would have put Zaslav in at like 80% of shareholder and being in charge. still turned down. Trump administration, by the way, has already come out and blatantly said they want Paramount to buy Warner Brothers, which is horribly unethical and a violation of all kinds of whatever. Their law has no rules anymore. So I don't even know why I'm talking about it. No reason to be political here. There was a third company that was in there. MGM? Did Amazon MGM put in for it? Is that the third one? I'm trying to see.
Sure.
But anyway, so all these companies are, here's the thing. I just want this to get over with. I need this to end because God damn, is this exhausting. And I just want to know where I can watch my Looney Tunes and can we bring back the classics wherever it goes. Don't kill what you got going with some of your existing franchises, whoever buys it, but let's make this thing go. Cause I'm tired. Tunney's so tired he walked away from his chair. I know he's still listening.
Smart man. He's a smart man.
He wisely stepped away from this, as he should have. Dave, deal with you and I. Dude, let's put in a bid for Warner Brothers Discovery. Maybe we can
let's
get
do it.
I'll give him $350. $350.
I'll match you.
The cat's in the show, though, now.
$700. Oh, man. Has any company been up for sale more times than WB in the last 3 years? I mean, my goodness. How many times are you going to get
Cat
sold, merged, resold? Was acquisition. I've got
plus
nothing
we're gonna,
at this
Plus,
point.
We're going to change the name. Then we're going to rename it. Then we're going to re-rename it. Then we're going to change it back to the old name.
We don't know what the fuck we're doing. I mean,
chaos involved in this whole thing is just bonkers to me. And the fact that Paramount has made three separate offers and all three of them have been rejected also tells me a lot about what the perceived value of this company is. And I find that to be staggering as well. Warner Brothers thinks that they're worth a lot.
If you're worth so much, why are you for sale again? You know, I mean, if you're doing so great, why are you for sale again? I don't know, man.
Intentional. This is the culmination of what Zaslav was brought in to do. Like, at the end of the day, like, Zaslav was there to bring down costs and set this company up to be purchased by someone else and, you know, maybe get rewarded on the way out. That's how I see this culmination. And
maximize the appeal and hope for the best. Well,
right. And that's
working. Don't know if that's working so well, guys.
Oh, something's going on. Anyway, so yeah, it's coming. It's coming. It's coming. We know that they will be under new ownership. The question is who will be the company that owns them? Tony, what you got?
Let me just say this. I had a Lewis Black moment where part of his stand-up is he comes out of wherever he is and he comes out of a Starbucks and he looks across the street and there's another Starbucks, right? It's like, what am I at the nexus of the universe? Well, currently on my PlayStation 5 in my media apps, there's HBO Max and there's HBO Max.
Because it used to be Max. Yeah, it's weird. The management of Warner Brothers Discovery /HBO has been just awful. It's just been awful, and that's why we need it to end. I hope whoever purchases Warner Brothers Discovery fixes it.
What's even more troubling is they have, like you're saying, we're only interested in the IPs and all that sort of stuff. They have the rights to some very powerful and lucrative IPs if they could just get their shit together.
You know who wants Warner Brothers Discovery to get purchased sooner rather than later?
People who hate AEW.
Disney. Nobody, don't do that. Disney just wants its Marvel characters back, goddammit. So they want Universal to buy Warner Brothers Discovery and then pull that DC property away from Six Flags. We'll see if that happens. Who knows what that contract is? I don't even know. I've always associated them together. But more on that as it comes, because more of that is going to come. What is happening now is we are coming to the end of this show, which of course means we have to go to one of my favorite segments, the What You Watching segment. Now, last week, Tunney sadly admitted he's just kind of been watching the same stuff. So I start with Mr. Tunney. Tunney, has your watching scenario changed? Or are we still in a rut, if you will? Until next week, when you get to start watching The Witcher.
Yeah, that's a rut breaker there, baby. That is a rut breaker.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, that's no. I watched something that I think is really important for parents to watch with their children, because I think the state of our society right now is just ridiculous. You go on Netflix and there's a documentary called The Perfect Neighbor.
Oh yeah, I've got that on my queue.
People should watch this and think about how we can start treating each other better. That's all I have to say.
Yeah, I know it's, I hear it's a tough watch. The story itself of that whole thing is nightmarish. So, and it has been strongly received critically. So it is definitely something on there. It is also one of those, it strikes me as one of those that I need to be in the right place to kind of watch it, like ready to hunker down and really pay attention to it and not just have it on, because I am guilty of that. Dave, what'd you watch, bud?
Well, I have some interesting news. I watched the first Knives Out, because we talked about that a few weeks ago. And I watched the first Knives Out and absolutely loved it. Daniel Craig with a third accent is just priceless. I love that sort of thing. Love the movie. Yeah, fucking Captain America. Just a really good, really excellent movie. So I'll be checking out the second one. I watched a movie I've been meaning to watch for a while that I just didn't get around to it, Knowing, with Nicolas Cage, which is a very... Oh, wow. Interesting kind of end of the world sort of scenario. And you know, I don't think maybe the aliens will take some of us away and leave the rest of us behind. But in other words, Tony's talking about Netflix shows. I've gotten through the first hour of House of Dynamite, which is phenomenal. I mean, really awesome. I would recommend that to anybody. I'm going to finish that today. So yeah, Netflix continues just to really deliver on all fronts.
I am full on spooky season. It's now we're getting into that time of year where I start pulling stuff that I own and watch every year out. This weekend it was time officially to torture the entire household as I once again watched a lovely 2001 stage production of the musical Jekyll and Hyde, starring David Hasselhoff himself in the role of Henry Jekyll and Edward Hyde. My God, boys, it's the most awful, beautiful thing you've ever seen in your entire life.
Was he drunk eating cheeseburgers in a closet by
no,
the end of it?
No, he is not. Okay. But maybe it would have made it a better show. It's hilarious because this was an awful.
Did it go over well in Germany?
It did. I bet it did. I'm German sure it went over in Germany. I also am doing a rewatch of a Netflix series that came out a couple of years ago. I was a big fan of Edgar Allan Poe. There is a limited run series that is titled The Fall of the House of Usher. It's an 8-episode miniseries. I watched it back when it came out. I'm rewatching it right now. I just love it. Every episode is named after a work of Edgar Allan Poe's. And then there's just all these different nods as it talks about this pharmaceutical family that is rotten from within and getting its comeuppance. Wonderful, wonderful show. And if you're into that sort of horror, it's worth watching. It's really, really good. And then after this podcast and dinner tonight, The Little O'Dowd and I, just available on HBO Max this weekend, the horror film Weapons is now available on HBO Max. Got huge buzz in the theaters. I was wanting to see it at the theaters, did not catch it. And for those of you, Amy Madigan is apparently a kind of a low-key treasure who steals the movie. For those of you who don't recognize Amy Madigan's worth, I best recognize her as Kevin Costner's wife in Field of Dreams. She's the partner there, and she is in a role unlike anything we've ever seen her do before. So
if you build it, she will come.
Right.
Or you want to step outside, you want to step outside, you Nazi cow. There you go.
So anyway, there you have it. That's what we are watching here on the bandwagon, which means it's time for us to wrap up. Before we get out of here, though,
ask you a question.
Yeah, you can ask me a couple
alien,
questions.
Alien
nope.
Earth?
Nope, not yet. Sorry. Also tonight, It, Welcome to Derry,
yes,
is debuting. Episode 1 of It, Welcome to Derry is plays tonight and will be available on HBO Max. Looking forward to that one as well, getting positive reviews. It is signed on for 3 seasons, and each season takes place 27 years before the season that you're watching, because its cycle is on 27-year increments, so it all makes sense. All right,
space cicadas.
Yes, it's interesting, and it's being made with Stephen King's input, though he is not a showrunner. He did give it its blessing, and he does like it. So good start there. All right, But before we head on out of here, let's tell everybody where they can find us around the internet, the social medias, and on the Chair Shot Radio Network. This week, we will start with David Ungar.
Yeah, you can find me on X and Blue Sky at Attitude Ag. That is at Attitude AGG. Facebook.com/Attitude of Regression. At Attitude of Regression, all one word, on Instagram and on Threads. And please go to the website, www.attitudeofregression.com. Check out what we got going over there. And check us out on YouTube as well. We're showing up there now too. So we're all over the place. Tunney's built this great empire. I just steer the ship. So
I've always said, surround yourself with people better than you and you can't miss. You can find me figuring out which HBO Max app to watch on my PlayStation 5 or at PC Tunney.
And you can find me on all of the socials at Wrestling Realist. That is at WrestlingRealist. You can catch me every Monday, Tuesday, and occasional Wednesday here on the Chair Shot Radio Network. Mondays talking nerdy stuff with these two guys. Tuesdays talking sports on the Four Corners podcast with David Ungar, where we tried to see if we could find a second win for the Toronto Blue Jays going back to Los Angeles in the future, not in the past, because you know we totally didn't record one podcast before doing this podcast. That's, oh my God, I've gone cross-eyed. Anyway, and then on Wednesdays, talking wrestling with Greg DeMarco when we feel like it. Thank you, everyone, for listening. This is going to do it for this week's edition of Bandwagon Nerds, so get yourself out of the basement, get some sun, and watch some spooky shit. Halloween is next week, or this coming Friday is Halloween, so make sure you get some spooky stuff in for spooky season before we transition to respecting the bird and talking Thanksgiving. This has been Bandwagon Nerds here on the Chair Shot Radio Network, part of thechairshot.com.
I experienced the 60s.
No, I think you had 250s and moved right on into the 70s.
Annie, look at this.
Oh, yeah? Well, your husband plowed under his corn and built a baseball field.
That's right.
Now, there's an intelligent response.
Annie.
The weirdo.
Annie.
Honey, it's all right. I'll be cool. At least he is not a book burner, you Nazi cow.